What's up, you guys? Sean Ross App, FightfulSelect.com. This is our NXT AEW review show. I thought tonight was a pretty subdued night. It was not one of the better nights in the Wednesday Night War, but I'll say that it was not a bad night, just not one that I look at and say, oh, you know what? I'll remember this in the annals of time. Like this one will be one that I look back on. Not the case. Let's talk NXT. Shotzi Blackheart defeated Dakota Kai. Man, don't know if I like Dakota Kai getting beat all the time like this. Is not my jam. Confirmed. Not my jam. I thought that she came such a long way being a heel, and she's getting 50-50'd now. And I mean quite literally 50-50. July 1st, she lost an elimination match. Her next time, she beat Rhea Ripley. The next time, she lost the tag match. The next time, she won. The next time, she lost her title match. And the next time, she won a tag match. Next time, lost a battle royal. Here she is losing again. There is no real momentum. It is win-loss, 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 win-loss. And that is very frustrating booking for me. It is getting very Raw light-ish, and I keep saying that because I keep believing it, my friends. NXT's got to do what NXT did to make them popular. Build up contenders and then make them strong and then square them off with a champion. That spot on the apron was disgusting. I hope that Shotzi is okay. She ended up getting the win, and I'm all for that. She has gotten really good in the ring. There's some character stuff that I would really like to see shored up. Rhea Ripley attacked Raquel. I'm all for that too. I want to see that match. To me, it's a headliner of an NXT show. We see Santos Escobar and Swerve Scott side by side. I would like to see these be a little bit more natural. I see so many face-to-face interviews and side-by-side satellite interviews in MMA that feel so much better. Like, they rarely wait for each other to talk. They rarely do. I mean, good God, we watched a presidential debate where the two presidential candidates couldn't let each other talk. We're supposed to believe these two guys full of testosterone. And now that I can curse after No Profanity September, all this piss and vinegar, we're supposed to believe that they're going to just calmly let each other explain? I don't think so. I don't think so. We also got one with Kyle O'Reilly where it looked at his career. I thought this was really good. Kyle O'Reilly is one of the best workers in the world. I would have to say probably my top five are Kenny Omega, Sasha Banks, Kyle O'Reilly, Kushida, and I'd probably throw Okada in there as far as people that I enjoy watching work the most. And I'm very excited that he's getting this opportunity. Again, I thought the terminology and the promos and the, it was a little, I don't want to say cringeworthy, but it was overly scripted. It didn't feel very natural between he and Finn Balor. And am I still excited for the match? Yeah, I'm very excited for the match. I love watching this guy do work. And I just, the promo wasn't for me. Shawn Michaels moderated it. Yeah, it was like there was this weird thing where O'Reilly was talking about how much better looking Adam Cole was, and then Balor interrupted him. I don't know, man. Ridge Holland comes out and beats up Cameron Grimes in the middle of a To the Moon Invitational Gauntlet match, and the match is over. I guess Ridge Holland got DQ'd for beating up Cameron Grimes too bad, so then we're going to get this match again next week because that's what WWE does. Woof. Austin Theory mocks Kyle O'Reilly backstage, and Adam Cole ends up confronting him, or ends up calling him out. They have a match that I thought was way too long. I love the patella drop, Brainbuster setting up the last shot, and Adam Cole getting that win. I thought this was too long. I get that, like, part of it, you want to leave Austin Theory credible as the threat, but Austin Theory isn't credible as a threat. He's not. Is he a future star? Well, they got to hope that he is. But is he a credible threat? No. Because since the Speaking Out movement, he hasn't won a match. His last win on TV was in June. He came back to NXT and he lost four matches. So no, he's not credible. Kushida beat him real quick. Bronson Reed beat him. Adam Cole beat him. Damian Priest beat him. He ain't winning matches. So stop presenting him to me as credible. Even at this point, stop presenting him to me as someone that can even get under Adam Cole's skin. This is one of those cerebral performers on that roster from a character perspective. I don't buy it. I don't buy that they're giving this 0-4 kid any attention. I don't buy it. And if you want me to buy it, get him some wins, get him in a team, rehabilitate the man in more ways than one, and then present it again. Kushida defeated Tony Nese. Oh, you know I love a good double wrist lock. I'm all for this. This was a solid match. Tony Nese, really good. I like the counter out of the pump handle suplex as well. Purple light, the lights turn purple, and Dream comes on the screen and mocks Kushida. It's going to be a real good match Sunday. We got our predictions on Fightful.com and YouTube.com/Fightful on Thursday. You all are probably listening to this by the... It's already out right now, if you're listening to this, probably. I did it with Throwback. Really enjoyed it. It was great. Throwback was awesome on that. He had some really good analysis on that, so I hope you guys take a listen. Cameron Grimes is wandering around looking for William Regal, and he runs into Dexter Lumis, who just stares at him. Caton Carter beat Xia Li with a real bad sunset flip pin, and Xia Li was upset after the match. Xia shoves her down. I'm not into this. This seems like lower card fodder because, as mentioned, everybody involved here has been portrayed as the lower card, and now they're just squaring off to be like queen of that lower card area. And it's like, I get it. Xia Li loses and then gets upset. Okay. Cool, man. Wonderful. Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae defeated Damian Priest and Io Shirai. I think they're going to win Sunday, too. Good match. I would have Damian Priest portrayed as too cool for school. I would have him portrayed as very street smart as well. I wouldn't let a lot of people get one up on him. I mean, like, have him have a skit where he goes back to the Monster Factory or something, and you got one of the coaches there being like, man, you're letting this get to your head. Where's the guy that we knew? Where's the guy that got to WWE? You got the championship. But maybe this is after he loses the championship. But he used to be the most street smart guy we knew. Now you're getting your tires slashed and hitting the balls all the time. Embarrassed. This was good. You know it's good. I'm not going to say Damian Priest is in that conversation for best worker, but he's one of my favorite to watch. That's for sure. Man, he is just really fun to watch wrestle, right? And Johnny's great. Got a pin there. Good stuff. So NXT TakeOver 31 is this weekend. I got Finn Balor beating Kyle O'Reilly. I got Johnny Gargano defeating Damian Priest. I have Candice LeRae over Io Shirai, Kushida over Velveteen Dream, and Swerve Scott over Santos Escobar. I think it's time to make the moves on each of those. Over on AEW, show peaked early. Ricky Starks, Darby Allin. Darby Allin beats Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks doesn't hurt even a little bit. I tweeted that Ricky Starks is so good at everything, and he really is. And you know who liked that tweet? This isn't me bragging about who liked my tweet. It was Tony Khan. It's me bragging about, obviously, what Tony Khan thinks of Ricky Starks, which is what a lot of people seem to think of Ricky Starks, and that's that he is so good at everything. The emotion, the selling, it, the back, like selling that back, it is second nature to him. And he's just, there are those people that you just know that everything comes natural and their basic instincts are so right when they do things. And that is Ricky Starks. They've been feuding for, 2.5 months now? But here's the thing. They feuded for 2.5 months. You know what their matches were prior? They were in a tornado tag match at the end of July. They were both in a battle royal. They didn't have a singles match before this. And when they did, it wasn't on a pay-per-view. It didn't have to be on a pay-per-view. This is a premium spot. Being on TNT, kicking off AEW Dynamite, that's a spot you should want. That's an action spot. You know you're getting action right there. And that's what they did. They took it, they made it pay-per-view quality, and Ricky Starks sold a pay-per-view quality ass-whooping like nobody else can. This was the best thing on the Wednesday Night War. This was the best thing. And it felt important because it clearly was important to Darby Allin and Ricky Starks. And it was important to Taz, who was on commentary. God, this was so good. Go watch this. If you got to watch one thing this week on Wednesday, you watch this show. And you look at Ricky Starks. If you don't watch Dark, you should. There are a lot of people that are built really effectively on that show. Ricky Starks started out beating like Griff Garrison and Robert Anthony and Lee Johnson, Sean Dean, Ben Carter. They would pepper in like Will Hobbs, who's a big dude. Then last go around, he got a win over Christopher Daniels. That's a good win. That's a really good win in about 6 minutes. So you get to work a variety of different times. That's something that we talked about in our interview. Ricky Starks is a future top of the line guy in this company. I think we know Darby Allin can be too. I can't say enough good things about this. There was just so much good about it. So much good about it. Go check out the 3 or 4 interviews we did with Ricky Starks this year. It seems like the only person from AEW we get, but you know what? If they want to give me Ricky Starks about 4 more times this year based on how he performed tonight, go ahead and do it, man. This ruled. Cody comes out and he talks about learning about working injured versus working hurt. And he talks about the promos of people being the ace of the company. And he says the only people that can lay claim to being the ace are Hikaru Shida, John Moxley, and Brody Lee because they've got the championships. And I love that. Cody Rhodes put over Hikaru Shida and Brody Lee and John Moxley, and he put over the championships as being important. I loved it. He did talk about shaking hands and all that stuff, but ultimately it was to get to him accepting the dog collar match. And Brody Lee comes out. This is next week, by the way. They're doing a match next week for the TNT title. And I liked the brawl up until they very weirdly did a spot where Brandi Rhodes came out and did a dive onto a bunch of dudes and knocked them over. Why did this happen? This did not need to happen. John Silver's catching her by himself. Look at those quads. He's catching her by himself. I don't like this. I thought this was bad. I thought it made those guys look bad. It screamed like, get Cody's wife over type of thing. And I watched a match with Brandi and Anna Jay last week. She don't need this to get over. She's better in the ring than people give her credit for. She didn't need that. If she was going to do it, why not do it to Kai Lynn and Nyla Rose and Anna Jay on the outside? Have them do it. Don't compromise the guys that are doing something completely different. But you had Kylan King and Nyla Rose and Anna Jay. They were there. Do it with them. I don't get it. Tony Schiavone's interviewing FTR and Tully Blanchard. Matt and quote-unquote Nick superkick Schiavone and then just leave. But Nick isn't there, so they keep him off screen. And Matt's like, I'll keep up with you. I got a chuckle out of that. Everybody knows he's not there. Not everybody, I guess. But if you're listening to this, you do know now. FTR beat SCU. I honestly thought this was going to go even longer. Pretty solid match. Scorpio Sky, you know the drill. He's going to be great. FTR are the most technically sound team that there is, and it was a good match. Didn't blow me out of the water or anything, but it was a good match, and that's all I can ask for in a situation like this, and it's for the titles. Again, it's important. Brush with greatness, I think is what it's called. Yeah, I was all for this. Isaiah Cassidy lost to Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho was on during this match, and so was Cassidy. Cassidy looked great. His facial expressions have come a really, really long way. To the point to where I think that he's breaking out a little bit, and as he really starts to fill out physically, man, he's gonna be one to watch. Which, I mean, so is Mark Quinn too. It's just that they both are gonna keep gaining experience. I loved Cassidy using the Codebreaker. Jericho's strikes again looked really good. He won with the Judas effect, and they tried to attack Isaiah, but Matt Hardy and Mark Quinn made the save. Backstage, MJF brings all of Inner Circle jackets except for Sammy, which he says was an accident. And they're teasing MJF joining Inner Circle, and it seems like Chris Jericho wants him in it. Wardlow and Jake Hager squared off. This is a pretty good segment, I thought. And there was there's back and forth, and you could see that some members of the Inner Circle wanted there to be some issues there. Pretty good. It took quite a bit of time, but pretty good. Orange Cassidy called FTR weenies. I guess that's what the feud's going to be based on. Okay. Orange Cassidy beats 10. 10 has some really good offense. He's got, like, it starts with a power slam, and then it goes into the End of Days. He could do that without the End of Days spot and just go into a straight flatliner, but it looks so much more impressive the way that he does it. Orange Cassidy wins with the Orange Punch and the Beach Break. I used to do a version of the Beach Break when I would do some matches, and his looks so good. So the way that it was done prior, it would land a lot like the Last Rites or the Deadeye with Adam Page, but you would land on your ass, and the person's head would still be a few inches above the ground. That way it wouldn't crash into there, and their legs would be over your shoulders, sort of like an Alabama Slam. So when you do the drop down, you'll pull on their heels or their calves, you'll pull like down on them, almost like a lever. That way you bring their head up a few more inches off the ground. That way it really takes them out of danger. And you do it, if there's a hard cam, I guess you would do it that direction for the viewing audience. But if there's no cameras like that, you do it towards, or you do it with their head facing the least amount of fans that you can. That way they don't see where the impact's not made. With Cassidy, he has people tuck their head like it's going to be a white noise, and they take it on their shoulders and their upper back, and it looks really good. You don't have to worry about the camera trickery or anything like that. So I love that he's developed this, and he's a strong dude. I know that a lot of people are like, hey, have a finisher that you can do on everybody. Or just have several. Why not several? Dr. Britt Baker's back. She looked awesome. She looked like she didn't miss a beat, and Red Velvet was really good here too. Britt Baker cracked Red Velvet so many times with strikes. You know, I would probably say this is my second favorite thing on Dynamite, and there, that tag match was really good. But seeing her back in the ring and seeing her look so good after, 5 months off? And I mean, with some strikes. That was good. And she won with a curb stomp, then applied the lockjaw afterwards. I like this because you're establishing a curb stomp for a finish, and you're establishing the lockjaw. Reba came out with her. Reba looked awesome. Reba looks like she's been working hard. Gave her the glove and all that. I just love that she's such a crony. Reba plays the crony so well. And I like that her name was Rebel, like both on other shows and within the context of this. And then they just change it to Reba. all on board, full steam ahead. Britt Baker, Big Swole, regular match needs to happen. Then we need to see Britt Baker taking on Hikaru Shida. But I would like to see Britt Baker continue to get wins, because otherwise you got a Britt, or you got a Big Swole in the picture, because she beat Britt Baker. I mean, Britt's got to do something to get that title match, or get that match with Big Swole back before she moves on to the title. Like, there's still more meat on the bone to that Big Swole story, I thought. John Moxley defeated the Butcher for the title. I mean, it was a very slow-paced match. It was Eddie Kingston's choice. It was okay. It was okay. It was... It wasn't what so much of this show is and what it has been, and that's okay. It's important to have a variety of things on a show, but the match was fine. Moxley's getting over that bulldog choke. I still want to see somebody sit out on that, because within a realistic perspective, on a bulldog choke, unless it's in real good, and Moxley has done some training, then what you would do is you would just try to, so your stomach down on that, you would try to get your hip cleared, the hip nearest the choke, and you would try to sit out and turn your hips the opposite direction of the choke and alleviate the pressure. You could also get your hips and try to turn in. You could bridge and pin him as well, but the bulldog choke isn't like a major, major success in MMA for those reasons. It's very easy to counter. It's very easy to get out of. Usually, if somebody has it locked in really good, sometimes it can be very hard, but usually it's very easy. A lot of times people have to be turtled up, like on their knees, like almost in child's pose, so to speak, if they want to get submitted by that hold. But it was fine. Nobody thought the Butcher was going to lose or going to win this match. And John Moxley continues to defend the title. But this is one of the things I like, is the title being defended on Dynamite, even against guys like the Butcher. I liked Drew McIntyre defending against Bobby Roode this week as well. So, hey, no problem there. But to say that I was pumped up when this came about, I'm not going to say that. But I know that Andy Williams is a good worker. And I know that I got to see him live last year in Toronto. Really good stuff. So, it was a good match. That's it. That's all you can ask for in a situation like this that they could not have expected. So we've got an 8-man single elimination tournament. The finals will be at Full Gear. The winner will get a title shot for the AEW title. Phoenix, Omega, and Jungle Boy are in it. Hangman Page was doing commentary during one of the matches, and he said that he wanted to still be in a team with Kenny Omega. And then Jim Ross announced this, and like, Paige was surprised. And I thought it added so much that Taz, a heel color commentator, was like, JR, you could have given him the courtesy of letting him know. And JR was like, I thought he did know. That added a lot to me. Like, Taz wasn't there like, hee, oh, look at him, he's so upset. No, it felt real. Didn't feel real. Pro wrestling, obviously scripted, but it added a lot. Next week we get Cody Rhodes versus Brody Lee for the TNT title in a dog collar match. Brian Cage will defend the FTW title against Will Hobbs. Good to see him there and healthy, apparently, in the 30-year anniversary of Chris Jericho, as he teams with Jake Hager to take on Japanese deathmatch legend Luther and Serpentico, because they were getting into it at ringside. I dig it. I think that Luther and Serpentico have been doing some good work on Dark, and Luther's been shutting up a lot of doubters, at least those that watch that show. He's proven quite useful. And yeah, that's my show, guys. Thank you all. Until next time, we're out.